right, guys, this is the John Hollywood Show. Welcome back again. I'm really excited about this episode because this man over here has definitely changed my life, and he's opened my eyes to so many things that I never really thought of or really would have pushed myself to think of until I talked to him. And it was like a 20, 30 minute conversation and then weeks of talking over DMs, which really, I think it was a huge impact on my life and really changed my perspective on a lot of things. Shay. I mean, there are so many things about this guy's energy you're going to see right off the bat that are crucial when it comes to being able to talk to somebody, because communication is hard in one, but whenever you talk to somebody that is so inviting as him, you're going to be like, holy shit, like I didn't even know I was opening up. Anyways, I'm going to let you let Shay tell you a little bit more about himself, and we're going to get this shit rolling. But later on the episode, we have a little surprise guest. So Shay, go ahead.
Hey, I appreciate that intro, John. It's been amazing to connect with you as well, and I'm looking forward to continuing our friendship together. So my name is Shay Bullen. I'm really happy to be here. I'm honored to be here. Currently, in what I have been for the past year, is I'm a men's transformational coach. And the work that I've found myself in, I never imagined that I would end up where I'm at. And it's really beautiful. There's not one other thing that I would rather be doing with my life currently. And that's quite a blessing. To give you a little bit of context, a little bit of a background, the darkest moment in my life was 8 years ago, rock bottom heroin addiction. And so that really broke up my life into two halves, in a sense, pre-sobriety and post-sobriety. And so getting sober for me was my first spiritual experience, in a sense. It just rattled me, scared me. I was going to die if I didn't get clean and sober. Drugs and alcohol were just the name of the game for me for many years. I mean, I established my identity around that party lifestyle when I was a early teenager growing up in Montana. And it was all fun and games for many years, but then it turned into straight up just escapism and not really knowing how to navigate my emotions, not knowing how to really have any sort of understanding of integrity and what it means to be a good boyfriend and be a good son, all these things. But I always dreamt about it. Like, I was like, there's got to be more to life than this. And so when I got sober, it became so much more than just abstaining from drugs and alcohol. I finally started to get to know myself on a deeper level for the first time in my life. And 8 years later, it's been this amazing journey of, I mean, I wouldn't wish some of my darker times, harder moments on my worst enemies, just because in sobriety, you got to feel every raw emotion. But that's what has contributed to my personal growth, is there's a level of resiliency and almost optimism too about my life these days. And so fast forward to now is I've got a story to tell. I've got a message to share with the world. I'm very fired up about it. I love working with men specifically. To give you a little bit, the most recent backstory of how I found myself in the men's coaching is as I was a personal trainer and saw a good amount of success in that industry. I really thrived in it, but I was like, man, there's something I want to go deeper. Like, I found myself, just for a quick example, working with a male client, and we'd be doing barbell back squats, and in between our rest times, he'd be talking about this breakup he's going through. And I was like, man, I want to be there for that conversation, like more than the squats. Like, maybe I could do the squats and the breakup. Like, how can we figure this out? And so then I got certified as a life coach and just started just winging it. And then I was like, man, I'm good at this stuff. This is my passion in life. So that's a little bit backstory.
It's hard for men to hear, like, I love working with men, because most, like, that's cringing almost. Like, most guys are like, he likes working with men? Like, what does he mean? That's like, that's weird. But no, like, it's serious. Like, guys are afraid to talk to other guys about shit that they're going through. And I was there before, and I still feel like in rare occasions, I'm afraid to talk to other men about what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. But like, for you to find passion and want to take it outside the gym and really focus on that, like, hey, how can we take this, like, this bonding or growth moment outside of a place where, you know, we're being vulnerable working out together and we're like broing out in the gym? Why can't we just have that conversation away from the gym? And for you to
And you know, I was hesitant in the beginning about that too, because, you know, I was raised in a way of like, yeah, not showing a lot of emotion, kind of men figure it out on their own. But the more insight I got into the lives of other men, the more they invited me in just a little bit, I started to see this like camaraderie. Mm-hmm. And then also, I hate to say it, I hate to sound pessimistic, but like men's pain, men's emotional pain is worse than I thought, worse than like, it's like, cause we're so good at fucking hiding it. And it's like, so when you start waking up to that truth and to really seeing how much men really are struggling underneath all the layers of protective mechanisms, it's like, I don't care about what you think of me. I don't care about what society thinks of all men working together and bonding in this way. It's like, y'all need help, cause y'all are gonna commit suicide, resort to drugs and alcohol, promiscuous, unfulfilling sex. And it's like, man, whatever. Like I'm here to serve.
Would you say that like you're trying to redefine masculinity?
Well, so that opens up a kind of a tricky answer, because we hear terms like toxic masculinity and stuff like that. And what I've come to realize is that there's no such thing as toxic masculinity. There's just wounded men that have, you know, there's manifestations of their behaviors as a result of their trauma that they've been through in their lives that society deems as toxic. So the behaviors are toxic, but the individuals are hurt. They've gone through some serious stuff. And so so it's not so much redefining masculinity. It's about courageously going into those wounds and really seeing how some of that subconscious programming patterns, how they have learned to deal with these wounds, are not serving them in the way that they once did. So sure, maybe drinking copious amounts of alcohol and having empty sex served you well and not talking about your emotions. But now, as you're getting into what, 25, 30, 35 years old as an adult male, we've got to come up with some healthier solutions that work for you.
Well, I mean, like the liquid truth, where people go drinking and then they end up exposing everything that's going on inside of them, but it never really fixes what's going on. They're just saying it and now they're embarrassed and now they don't want to say it ever again. So it's like, you're trying to take the, without inducing the chemicals out of the situation, like you want to talk with people with being vulnerable and like actually addressing the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And to really, because, you know, and I just want to add that just because I'm sober, I don't push any sort of sobriety agenda on my clients or the people that I speak with. But we've got to take a good look at, like, what is your relationship with substances like? Is it serving you? Is it complementing your life? Or is it actually a form of escaping some of the emotional pain that's going on and hindering you from achieving more growth in your life, more fulfillment? And a lot of times the answer is yes, this shit's getting in my way.
So you posted something the other day that really hit home with me that made me think about all of my decisions. And it was being mindful about drinking. And like, mindful in itself is one of those words that kind of fits with everything. Like, you're really thinking about what you're doing prior to doing it and thinking about what you're doing and how it affects you after you do it. And when you made that post, I was like, holy shit, like, it's such a simple thing to think about, yet it's left behind so often. Like, can you go in to kind of abbreviate on what you posted about the other day? Because it hit home for me, and I feel like people on here are definitely going to benefit from that.
Yeah. So, well, first I'll start with just this, just the broad idea of mindfulness. So mindfulness is just a form of just gathering more information about the present moment. Like, how am I feeling exactly here in this moment? What are the sensations that are going on in my body? So we start with the body first, and it's information that the five senses is picking up. It's like, oh, I'm noticing a tightness in my chest. Oh, that kind of feels like anxiety. Okay, boom, that's item number one. It's like we're creating an inventory list. And number two is like, I'm feeling some exhaustion in my legs. Like, it's like, oh, maybe today should be a rest day. It's slowing down, sinking into the present moment a little bit more. Oh, I notice it's really hot in this room, or I notice these colors and sensations in my peripheral. And so what this is doing is allowing you to get out of the intellectual mind, because I know us men especially, we can just get so wrapped up in our thoughts and where a lot of times we start noticing, like, we become slaves to our intellectual side of our minds, and we just, it can create anxiety. We're anywhere but here in the present moment. We're in the past, we're in the future, and it's not serving us. So this mindfulness approach is about gathering information in the here and now with the intentions to make more of an educated decision on how to proceed to the next moment, so to speak. So it's about slowing down. And then you take something like drinking that for a lot of us is just very habitual. It's very societal. You know, it's just kind of part of the deal of being a human here in America. And I think a lot of us can relate that there's a shadow side to drinking and everything from hangovers, maybe saying things we didn't mean to say. And there's, so to approach this in a more mindful way to see, like, is this really working out for me? It's like, it worked out for me when I was 21 years old. Sure. But like, man, maybe like these couple beers out at the river with the friends, it's like, it seems so fun and casual, but like, is it holding me? Sure, it's not forcing me to go to rehab, and like, I'm not going to be hungover tomorrow, but like, could I be doing something more productive, like that will allow me to make more money and be a better person or whatever it may be? So there's so much more I could share, but that's kind of the gist.
I think the thing that really hit home with me, it was like, you said something like, when you start drinking, do you really have the rest of the day? And are you going to be as productive the rest of the day? If, say, I started at 10 a.m. and I was having a few beers at brunch or breakfast or whatever with people. And am I going to be as productive that night as I would be if I would have not drank those beers? And it was one of those, like, when every minute that I'm working with during the day is precious. Like, I took the time to give, to like really be around other people. But now that I drank, I'm just taking away more time from the productivity that I could be doing later on that evening. And in turn, is it going to affect me tomorrow? So like, instead of losing 10 or 12 hours, I now lost 24 hours or 48 hours because my body's not going to recover from it as long as, you know, as fast as I usually would when I was 21. And like, right now I'm 30, and is my body recovering from it as fast? Fuck no, it's not. Like, I'm losing that whole day that I could have either been on recording an episode or, you know, talking with people, networking or researching or really educating myself. And like, it's being mindful about that decision. I really didn't even think about it until I saw it the other day. I was like, holy shit. Like, those two beers kind of did slow down the thought process. And I was really blind to it, or numb to it, until, you know, I saw your video.
Yeah. And can I just dive in? We're going to examine this just a little bit further, and use the words like lost 24 hours or lost 12 hours. And I want to kind of magnify that a little bit. So sure. When we think in terms of emotions, a lot of us, we use alcohol or drugs to complement life or to kind of make it fun. And ultimately to feel a little bit better. Right. And so what I have come to realize in sobriety and the people that I work with is that I'm going to call it your edge. And so our edge, what if your edge in your life is that anxiety or that boredom or that loneliness that would typically be relieved by alcohol? Mm-hmm. And what if you courageously sat with that edge? I'm just going to come up with a random example. So choosing a day not to drink when you really wanted to, or not to go out with the friends and not lose those 12 hours. But with that comes a high level of discomfort because you're bored. Maybe you're lonely or craving some partnership or friendship. But that edge is forming you. It's causing something. It's a ripple on inside, if that makes sense. There's a discontentment, and I have found discontentment is the catalyst towards some serious action in your life, like making game changing decisions for your life. And if you keep avoiding that over and over again by just going out and being playful, it's like it creates some stagnancy. And that's what I've found, is like, I can level up so much faster when I can stay there in that anxiety and that loneliness and learn from it, and not be so quick to escape it.
Getting comfortable being uncomfortable.
That's right. That's right.
And it's like, there's so many people that really are good at that. And one of those is a good friend of ours, Zach. And Zach, like, what, he just got done doing 36 miles? It was a shit ton of miles on his birthday.
34 miles.
And that's crazy. But are you ready to introduce him? Because he's waiting for us.
I'm ready.
What's up, y'all? What's going on?
Okay, so this is Zach. Zach, we were talking about getting comfortable being uncomfortable. And I know you are one of those that is really good at that, because, I mean, you just did a pretty big thing for a great cause. And can you tell us a little bit more about that, on your insights about it?
Getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. Yes, that is one of my favorite things to do. So recently, for my 34th birthday, decided to hold a fundraiser to fight social injustice and to support an awesome individual that I met named Anthony Evans, who was peacefully protesting and was shot with a rubber bullet. It fractured his jaw, got his jaw wired shut. And so, yeah, we've helped raise funds for him, but decided to walk 34 miles in honor of my 34th birthday and to raise some funds for him. But
how did tell us a little bit.
It went really well. It went really well. Thankfully I was assisted to run the event by Jesus Ruiz and Aubrey Miller. Definitely needed their help. We had a hydration station, and then I walked 3 laps and some change around Lady Bird Lake. But it was definitely a challenge. My feet were very angry with me at the end, and a few of my toes are still purple from doing it.
I mean, you had an unbelievable amount of support. And then I feel like when you go into that place where you're going for that long physically, you really got to tap into something mentally. And I think you brought up, you know, living on that edge for a while and getting comfortable being on that edge. Do you feel like it, like, what, in other words, how would you put it, Zach?
Well, for me, doing a challenge like that gives you fuel for future endeavors. So, for example, last year I ran 33 miles, and that was one of the biggest mental challenges I've ever been through. You know, I did 132 laps around a track, and I mean, it was a mental battle. I mean, there were times where I cried. I was by myself. I laughed. I remembered my childhood. I remembered addiction. I remembered getting sober. And it's doing something like that and continuing to push forth when you're having these conflicting thoughts, like, oh, I want to stop. This hurts. My foot hurts. My knee hurts. But moving forward, that's fuel for future endeavors. And that's what I love about putting myself in uncomfortable positions. Mm-hmm.
So do you say you take those physical moments of being uncomfortable and like bring them with you when you're going through mental battles or the struggles that you might be going through with, you know, your personal life outside of being athletic?
Absolutely. I think it's, like I said, it's fuel. So they definitely translate, because it's still within your mind that the battle is occurring, you know, and it's, if you can do something that you don't think that you can do, you set out and you're like, I don't even know how this is going to be possible, but I'm literally just going to look one line ahead, run to that line, you know, and that's the same with any journey in life. You can apply that the same wave. If I just focus on that next line ahead and I get there, the top may seem insurmountable or not even possible, but it's just one step ahead.
Shay, can you build on that a little bit more?
Yeah. You know, I'd like to argue that, and I think Zach can relate to this too, that it becomes less about the actual accomplishment in the moment, and the bigger overview of what's actually happening is learning to trust yourself more. And as a result of getting out of your comfort zone, it gives you more and more of a deep trust of like that I've got my own back. I can push forward. I've got this, that I'm going to be okay despite any sort of adversity or physical pain. And I have some recent experiences that really can just helped me grow in so many ways. My sister passed away in October and my parents got a divorce. I went through a breakup. I went through a dramatic career transition. And so all these external things of like that normally I would have lost my shit many years ago. But like, there is a level of just like internal groundedness that I am okay. And I can meet these things with just a little bit more grace. Sure, it's challenging. I'm not perfect. I'm not superhuman. But like, to not lose my shit, basically, and learn how I can keep growing from them, and showing up as a man of integrity and a man that is of service to his fellow people, rather than just like sinking in and like crying and just not being of any use to anyone. Right.
So I went through something similar recently with my son, and my son had been going through some things where he was like, I am tired of doing this back and forth thing, and I want to stay with my mom. And that's fucking hard on me. And for a father to really hear their child be like, I don't want to be over there because I'm tired of driving to your house. Like, what's really going on? And when I was talking to Lydia about it, she was like, so if you look back 5 years ago, how would you have responded? And I know personally, I would have been like at the end of the bottle every day. And I would have been finding the end of the bottle without a doubt. And it wouldn't have been, you know, addressing or helping anything. But now, like, as I look at how I respond today, I'm like, well, I all I could do is continue to remind him that I'm here for him and that I love him and I miss him until, you know, he decides to change the way that he's thinking about things. I don't know why he got there or how he's there, but I'm going to make sure that he knows that I'm still here and I'm not going anywhere. And that just that mindset frame, that the switch that I had to go through now, and really, hey, the things that we think are helping us aren't helping us. And the mental strength you need to have and really tap into with those really difficult moments that are a punch in the face, whether it's a traumatic loss, which I'm really sorry to hear about that, or a huge breakup, which is really fucking hard for men to address. Like, why'd this girl break up with me? I didn't do anything wrong. But it's like really tapping into those moments where like, I need to think about this before I like make a rash decision that's going to affect it more than anything and not help me.
Yeah. And that's, you hit it on the head there, is to pause. And me and Zach, I mean, especially can really attest to the power of pausing. And as me and you were talking about earlier, John, mindfulness of like, mm-hmm. Moving away from reactionary behaviors into more of a mindful approach to life, to slow down and invite in our higher selves of like, what would be the best plan of action moving forward? Because the old me wants to just flip out and like cry and just like throw something, right? Or drink something. But that only makes things worse.
Unless you go to a destruction room and then you pay for breaking stuff, which is okay. I mean, it's acceptable, but not in your own home.
Yeah.
So, you two together run one of the biggest things that I think was like a huge eye opener for me as in a community is the Sprint Squad. And I saw the other day, it's coming back. What's the deal with the Sprint Squad? I know some of your people are going to watch this and be like, I want to hear more. I need an explanation why I can't see all my friends.
Yeah. Zach, do you want to take the lead on this one?
I'm going to pass that to you, Shay.
All right.
Deflection. I love it.
Well, normally Zach would have taken that one and ran with it, but we have some bad news for you, John. We got an email from the city just a couple days after that first email, and saying, wait a second, we jumped the gun. We're not letting workout groups proceed. You know, we're still level 4 pandemic status in the city. So it was actually, to be really honest, for me and Zach, it was a blessing in disguise, because what initially happened was email from the city saying, you guys are good to go. You just got to follow, you know, masks, social distancing, all those things. And so I got fired up and I made a big Instagram post. I mean, it's got like 150 shares and like all these comments. People are stoked, like probably like 50 new follows. And then me and Zach started talking about how this is going to go down and how we can like kind of be a little like rebellious and like do it. But also like try to maintain some sort of safety. And we realized it's like, man, this isn't fun. We don't want to do this. Like, we want to either go back to the old way or not do it at all. And then next day got the email from the city saying we can't even do it. So, so it's on pause for quite a while longer, I think. And Yeah, we shall see.
Can you tell me a little bit more about Sprint Squad, what it is? Because I feel like there's an energy that most people can't understand. And it's unless you're out there, because I know I was really insecure about going out there, talking about earlier. It was one of those where I was like, I can't be out there. These people don't like me. And I don't want to be around that. Like, it's something different than that. And can you explain it a little bit farther?
Zach, you want to take this?
Yes.
There you go.
I was wide open. I was like, throw me the ball. So Sprint Squad, honestly, I feel like the name and what it represents, it's kind of moved from what it started as. You know, so Shay started it, and I was one of the first few people to attend, and we ran on Wednesdays, and it was about sprints. It was about exercising and moving, and we did it in the summer, Wednesdays at 6 p.m. It was hot as hell. But more and more people came. You know, Shay is a really gifted connector. I think that's one of his great gifts that he brings to the world is the power to connect people. And as more and more people started to come, it became less about sprints and more about community, more about bringing people together and honoring the beauty in that. And it just kept growing from Zilker Park. We got kicked out of Zilker Park because it was too big.
Yeah, like 1,000 people out there.
Yeah, it's not about making money or anything like that. But there's too many people, you know, but we eventually found a really awesome park on the east side, and Roy G. Guerrero Park. And that's where the last iteration it was happening. But the most beautiful thing is, like I said, the community is bringing people together, having people meet people that they wouldn't normally meet. We started to expand some characteristics of it. You know, for example, at the end of sprints, we have people sharing about their businesses or what they're offering in the community just to give people further exposure. We've held fundraisers as well. You know, it was really exciting to see the trajectory and where it was going and what sort of impact it would make beyond just sprinting and exercise. But unfortunately we had to take a pause, but I have faith that it'll be back at some point when the time is right. You know,
it's just an overwhelming, like it's a comfort almost you're being uncomfortable out there because you're doing something that you typically wouldn't do. Most people say like, I don't want to run. Like I don't, but like the meeting after and before, like just meeting and I don't know how many people came up to me the first day I was out there. It was like 40 different people. Like, hey man, what's your name? Like, I don't know who you are, but I'm John. Hey, what's up, man? Like, and then I think you guys do like a new man introduction and stuff like that. Like it's, it's so cool. Yeah. So Shay, something I wanted to really pick your brain on a little bit more and something that you introduced me to was your men's groups. And when you get together as a group, you kind of, as we touched on prior, you touched on getting them to communicate and being comfortable communicating in that setting. How did you come about doing that? And like, how does, when in the moment, how like impactful do you think it is for other guys to see other guys being like that?
Yeah. Well, there's an old saying, probably everyone, all the listeners have heard it before, is that iron sharpens iron. And I found that to be very true, that us men need to be surrounded by other men who are either further ahead on their path of becoming warriors or ones that are like-minded on equal stages in their journey, that it's just so necessary for us men to keep holding each other accountable of you know, things outside of finance or fitness. It's like these more softer emotional sides of things, like how can we be the best boyfriends we can be? Like, what would it look like if we learned to treat our mothers with a little bit more love and respect and gratitude for bringing us into the world, no matter how dysfunctional our mothers may be, whatever, you know, there's so many different areas that tend to get neglected. And I owe just so much to sobriety, because when I got sober, I really did feel like a fish out of water, that I needed all the help I could get. And so things like therapy and men's groups and male mentors just became like just godsend to me, because I was like, man, I need to figure something out because I really don't want to go back to using drugs and alcohol. And I started realizing, like, whoa, this is big stuff. Like, this is really helping me. I'm starting to feel like a level of love towards myself that I've never felt before. I'm starting to learn the power of service to other people and being in tune with like other people's suffering and learning how to kind of just be a good human to them. And then now fast forward to like devoting my whole life to it, my work to it. It is my life's purpose to bring men together in more of this authentic way. And so a lot of it is, you could say unstructured, where when me and my guy friends get together, like on my birthday last week, for example, we had brought like five guys together. We meditated. We had a quick little vulnerable share. And then we went swimming at 7 a.m. in near Barton Springs. So just kind of making the connections more with more depth when we do hang out. But then there's the actual more structured part of my business. So right now I'm almost so close to starting the enrollment phase for my men's group called Presence is Power. So there will be a financial commitment to it, but it's an 8-week program bringing 12 guys together. So I'm going to start promoting that here pretty soon. So if any of your listeners are curious to learn more, please have them send me an email.
Yeah, well, I'll make sure that all the information's in there.
Yeah, sounds good. But I'm just seeing it's necessary. It's so crucial, especially with the state of the world right now. Like, us men need all the help that we can get.
Can you talk about, I hate to like dive into the people that have gotten involved, but can you talk about the different walks of life that have gotten involved with that? So like, I know it's not just one type of guy. It's got to be different types of people that have come to you and approached you about that and really been able to open up about it.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I've thought about this as well, is that I can kind of break them up into two groups in a sense. That group one is a man that's just, he's in a lot of pain. He's just really struggling. He doesn't have a lot of friends. He's typically not very active. He does well in his career. He makes good money, but his social life is just not where he wants it to be. And he's really struggling to find a girlfriend and just like, or a boyfriend as well. I work with gay men as well. So that's a huge part of my work as well. And so it's kind of this, very lonely and feeling down and out with life, right? And then there's this other side of you could imagine that he's got the money, he has promiscuous sex, he's in good shape, his social life is just great, but internally he's really struggling because like he wants more out of life. He wants to pursue his passions in life, and he's devoted so much to his work that he's neglected like his own what he actually wants to do. And so there's a whole gray area with all of this, but that's kind of the two groups that I've realized, if that makes sense.
That's so awesome. And I know like you and Zach are very close. And so like Zach, from just being close with Shay, and like how has he kind of introduced some of those things into your life and really kind of changed you as a man?
Well, I can go back to honestly, like a specific, honestly, it will be one of those most magic moments of my life. The type of men that Shay described, I would say, yeah. I was the second one, you know, having promiscuous sex, presented a very strong facade to the world, but inside dealing with a ton of pain, just absolutely struggling. So when I first met Shay, We got close very fast. I was actually in rehab where Shay was volunteering, and we sat down one day, and that was the first time that I had ever been fully transparent, where I had shared with another man all the depths of my being. I left no stone unturned, and in turn, he responded to me with love, and it allowed me to take a huge leap forward in self-forgiveness, because what was keeping me held down for so long was this self-hatred and just holding on to everything of my past, holding on to everything that I ever did, holding on to this negative, self-disparaging talk. And that moment, I can remember it so clearly. It's like one of the most fond, you know, flashbulb memories that I'll have in my life, because I can say that my life switched from here and went in a completely different direction in that moment. And it wasn't like I received a bunch of money or anything like that. I didn't get a car. I didn't get anything physical. But what I got was the gift of freedom, because I had mentally enslaved myself. And I think that's a really good way to describe when you find yourself in that pain, is mental enslavement, mental imprisonment, because you're trapped within these walls. You see the outside. You want to get there, but you don't have the tools to break open the jail. You don't have the key. And that was the gift. And I think that that solidified our brotherhood. And I needed that. I needed so much when I was in that point of my life. And thankfully, our lives crossed paths. And it's only expanded from there.
That's oh my God, that's absolutely incredible. And I think I remember you telling me about that in our interview together. And I mean, mm-hmm. like it's inspirational in itself that being in that position where you're at the bottom, or you feel, so to speak, and you're trying to find that way to recover. And then who would have known, just letting it go and letting the things that are in your head go to another man and really exposing or becoming free, you know, the expressing, the being free of your thoughts and letting those thoughts really be heard. And then, you know, there's a thousand different ways that Shay could have responded. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, the energy that both of you guys have together. And like, whenever I've talked with you guys together or alone, I felt like that, like the doors are open and anything can be said. And it's just super fucking easy to talk. And it's super blessed to have met both of you and know both of you. And like, this is absolutely incredible. And I just want to say thank you for everything that you guys have done for me personally, and then for coming on the show with me. And I definitely know there's going to be a lot of things that people can pull from this, because I mean, just the 30 minutes, 40 minutes that we've been talking, like there's some huge fucking wins between all three of us. And for both of you, for sure. And then that clarity that Zach is talking about, like that shit is priceless. And I'm sure that Shay, you've run into that too, from where you are now, from where you were 7 years ago. Cause yeah, I mean, too. those chemicals are, those can take your life. Yeah. And something that I just remembered that I really want to dive in a little bit more with you guys, because you guys should, and with how big your communities are, something that was brought to my attention was people have reached out about suicide to me a lot over the last month. And it is terrifying, because I know I've been there. And I know, like, that moment where you look at, like, I'm done fighting because I don't have anything left. Mm-hmm. How would you approach that? How would you, because I don't know, I'm not saying that you guys have been there before. If you have, like, when there's nothing left and you're tired of fighting with yourself in that mental game, making the decision to go and not do it, like, what would you say? How would you encourage the opening up and seeking help?
Well, that's where my work kind of stops, is because okay. That's when we would need to get involved with a mental health professional that is a little bit more skilled with something as serious as that. Mm-hmm. So if that ever comes up with clients, it hasn't yet, but we've had the suicide conversation a lot with my clients, of like, of moments in the past and, mm-hmm. and how there's you know, there's kind of a reference point where they don't want to go back to, but yeah. Current suicidal ideation, that's something I can't really speak too much about, but I will say I can speak from my own experience of, you know, throughout the depths of my addiction, I was never suicidal, but it was about 3 years sobriety, and I was going through a breakup, and I went over to her house to like do it. I was taking the initiative to do it. It was kind of mutual, but it was me more leading it in a sense, and we had that awkward conversation, we're crying, and I just found myself in like this 10-minute window was like, this is so fucking uncomfortable. Like, I don't want to I can't imagine my life with her, and I can't imagine my life without her. And like, I seriously considered suicide, and this is 3 years sobriety. I was just like, this is so painful. And in the fallout after, you know, it was around Christmas and it was with my family, and it was just a miserable time. But what that did was, like, when I worked through it, I just kept meeting those intense emotions that would come up of loneliness and attachment to her and attachment to how, you know, this shouldn't be happening. And I kept working past it as I broke free from it finally. And I found a new sense of resiliency within me, and a new sense of kind of taking ownership of my life and what I wanted to create in my life. And it was such a gift. And I just got dealt like a serious level of life curriculum, in a sense, working through that. And it catapulted me. So, but yeah, I can't go too much in depth with actual suicide.
I know that's where I typically go, is like, if it's in the moment, it goes to a hotline. But if it's like, hey, you have helped me through behind the scenes, I'm like, holy shit, that is unreal. Like, that is just the content being there helped you change your mind about that. Like, that is just.
And then when you keep receiving messages like that, your journey, that whatever you're trying to create here with this show and who you're trying to be in the world, it takes on new meaning. It takes on a new level of seriousness that, hey, this ain't about you anymore. This is about those people. So you need to keep overcoming your own personal fears and limiting beliefs and making shit happen.
That's exactly what I've run into. And it's like, I'm just going to say 10, because I don't know how many times it's been. And it's been the, hey, your podcast or your posts on TikTok or your stuff you put on Instagram or the videos have been, they have pushed me away from going there, and they have pushed me back in the direction of where I need to be and finding my happiness, not mine, but theirs. But it's like finding what I need to do to make me happy. Mm-hmm. And it's just unreal. And it's that one of those moments of like, keep pushing, man, keep. And that's why I could not stress more for you guys to search out these guys' content, because they're people that I look towards that have very positive energies, and they're very selfless. And it's people that if you follow me, you should probably be following them. You should be following them. But I thank you guys so much for coming on and taking the time out of your day to be here with me. And I thank everybody for joining in and watching and learning and like really taking an open mind to what we have said. And until next time, everybody, thank you so much for being here, and I'll talk to you all later.
Thank you.